Well, amen, amen. Well, that's good to be saved, isn't it?
Amen.
Good to be in church.
Amen.
Good to see me.
Amen.
Well, you guys kind of tuned it back there on that third one, but it is always good to be saved. You ever make a bad decision? You know, like you get in the lane at Walmart. Let me tell you women something. You can buckle the knees of the strongest man with one action. Get in Walmart and be in front of him and pull out your change purse. My wife does that. When my wife does that, I want to go, I don't know this woman. When a woman pulls out her change purse, I go, that's a wheat penny. I'll save that for my grandchild. I said, look, here's 20. I'll pay for groceries. Get her out of here. But you know, like you get in the line and you think this is going to go fast and then somebody's paying in pennies. Or at the toll booth, the guy drops his money on the ground and you're stuck by a semi. Or you buy the only thing in the restaurant that died in vain. Sometimes you make a bad decision, right? Let me tell you, what if I told you there's a way you could always make a good decision? Sound good? All right, here it is. Go to church. It is always good to go to church. I do not believe this. I do not believe you folks from this church should be in every service that we're going to have this weekend because I'm here. I do not believe that. I believe you should be here because it is your church. The lights are on, the doors are open, and whatever they're doing, you ought to be part of it. Let me tell you about your church. You know, we preach in a lot of different places and have a different relationship with every church. Sometimes you come in and I have a meeting. It'd be a good meeting. But, you know, don't have a relationship with the church or with the pastor. It's just how it is. And then there's churches where the pastor is a good friend. And I count your pastor as a good friend. I do. He is a good man. And what else did you want me to tell him? 2 weeks in Hawaii, new car. But anyway, really, your pastor is a good man. And from the day, the first time we ever came here, he and his wife have been dear friends to Kathy and I. But sometimes I come into a church and the pastor is a good friend, but there's not that relationship with the people in the pew. And then sometimes we come and it is like not just the pastor but the whole church are good friends. Anyway, I don't know why I told you that. So let's sell a book. I'll tell you stuff that's on the book table. My wife will be back there to take your money. Last August, her and I celebrated 45 years of marriage.
Amen.
45 years, I can testify. She knows how to take money. You have no idea what a blessing it is for me to see her taking somebody else's money. Somebody did ask this. They asked, do we take credit cards? Yes, the answer is yes. I think the last one we had for 3 weeks. I may not look like Mary Smith, but I was for 3 weeks. It quit working halfway through a gas fill-up. But this, baby, do we have, we don't have the New Testament, do we? This is a series. I did not write this, but we published this. This is the Old Testament Companion. There is a companion to this one called the New Testament Companion. It is a fill-in-the-blanks type devotional. It's been very well received. People that have gotten it have been very pleased with it, and we're happy that it sells. So that is back there. This one is rightly defining the words of truth. You guys know Mike Walski, the missionary to Poland. This is his son Toby. This is my son Nathan's brother-in-law. I think this is the newest publication that we just finished. Now, let me say this: this is the only copy we have, so it is $1,000. But this week, half price. Now, here's what we do. When we only have one, we leave it on the table. If you want it, especially if you're from this church, or if you aren't from this church, here's what you do. Kathy's got a list back there. You pay for the book and then put your name on the list. If you're from this church, just put that you're from this church. If you're from someplace else, put your address on there. And then when this meeting is over, we we throw that list away and keep that money. And this has really been a moneymaker. In fact, this is the only book we'll ever have. If you're from this church, we'll send the box here and take care of the shipping. If you're a visitor from someplace else, we'll ship it to you. So that book is back there. This is the first meeting we've had it in. It's my latest, called Your Purpose for Existing. You may have had a book I wrote called For His Pleasure. And that is this book with two new chapters plus some other added information. When I did that book, there were just some things I kind of felt I left out, so we brought it out with a different title. But it also has new material, so that book is back there. This is one of the neatest things. You know, I get a lot of unsolicited material. People give me this, oh, here, I brought you a book I wrote, read it. I'm writing five now, and they want me to read theirs, and so I don't read them. In fact, honest, one day I'm sitting in the trailer, and I reached behind my chair, and I found a manuscript a guy had sent me 3 years earlier. I think it was Why I'm Going to Kill Myself in 60 Days If You Don't Stop Me. But I just don't have time to read stuff. And I was in this meeting probably 10 years ago, and this lady came up with a CD with a black magic marker that said Scottish Preachers. And she said, my son put this together, and you can do what you want with it. I thought, what I want with it. But I said, look, I said, we've got a night drive, and so we'll listen to it. And so we had about, a couple weeks later or something, we had a night drive. And I am telling you, we put this in the CD in the RV, and at 1:30 in the morning, we're going across I-40 crying, just weeping, both of us. It is a montage of Scottish preachers, and it is one of the most amazing things I've ever heard. So that may be a blessing to you. This is yours. I'll give that one to you right after service. And then this is the big one. This is the 24-hour King James Seminar. I do one. We do it on Thursday and Friday. We go 12 hours. We start at 8 in the morning on Thursday morning, go to 8 at night. 8 Friday morning, go to 8 at night. In that 24 hours, you actually get more than I teach in the Bible Institute in Boise. It is a year's curriculum. There are 32 or 33 different lessons. What's in here, you have the two lines of manuscripts from Antioch and Alexandria, information on the Hexapla, the Apocrypha, the three places that Antioch, if you ever heard that in the Apocrypha, Antiochus Epiphanes dies three different deaths in three different places, which is good if you can do it. And I've got all of those documented. The six theories of inspiration. Guys, I know the one that you sign on to, and it's not right either. Now, I love Americans, but Americans believe that no matter how serious a problem is, it can all be taken care of with one sentence. You could say, I'm on a plane, we're crashing, a Muslim's about to cut off my head, and I'm choking. And somebody go, we'll just do this. That's how everybody does that. And this book is written by an infinite God, right? And you're going to describe how he did it with one sentence? Are you kidding? And so we look at the six theories of inspiration, but this book will not be defined by anything you think you're going to write down. The establishment of the canon. Who said these 27 books belong in the New Testament? You will be shocked at how early the canon was taken care of. Desiderius Erasmus, two names you never want to give your children. there's a segment in here on reasoned eclecticism, which the lie in that is the reasoned part. I call it scholarship on drugs, scholarship gone wild. Now you guys, being a church like this with your pastor, you've got a good knowledge of Antioch and Alexandria. And isn't this basically how Bible correctors do it? They make a change to the King James Bible, and we say, why did you take that verse out? Or why did you change that? And they go, well, because the Alexandrian manuscripts are like that, and we think those are better than Antiochian, correct? They don't do that anymore. I read the scholars. Here is what they say. We put in what we think should be there and hope someday a manuscript will be found with our conjecture. So there's no authority whatsoever. It's scholarship on drugs. And so that is there. We trail the originals. Now, here's what's in this. There are, I think, 12 DVDs of the 32 lessons. There is a CD of that's an MP3 of the entire audio of this. And then there's a CD, because with this, I think there's like 130-page, 8.5 by 11 syllabus that comes with it. And that is in there. And for your information, if you buy this, you are not going to put this on the internet. Thank you very much. You know why I don't do these anymore? Because a King James Bible believer sabotaged it. I have to clear $5,000 just to break even. And the last one I scheduled, three people signed up for. Because some guy's going to save all of you from the money grubber. So he put them on for free. And you say, what'd you do? Well, I have a guy that used to work for Navy Internet Security. We took down two sites in this country, one in Europe. And this guy, you know where he put them on? A pirate site. Under an alias. That's how honest this guy is. And so he contacted me under his alias and go, you could have talked to me about you took down my site. I said, well, you stole my material and put it on. You could have talked to me before you did that. And he wrote back and he said, well, you stole it from God because he knows everything. And at that moment, I thought, I wonder if he rides a two-wheeler. He probably wears a bicycle helmet when he walks down the street. But there probably will never be another one of those because we will lose that battle. We will lose that battle someday. So those are, but those are back there. Gipper, Kathy will be back there to help you with whatever you need, any questions you have, or anything like that. Right, just a second. Let me get this message, and then we'll get started. Point one. You know, guys, I can preach this whole message, or we could take a really large offering right now and I can cut it short. Because I'm a Baptist preacher and I cannot be bullied or intimidated, but I can be bought. I want you to open your Bible to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. I'm not preaching out of that. I just want to see if it's in your version. Guys, I do want to tell you, I have been looking forward. I won't tell you how much I wanted to be here. Your pastor knows how much I wanted to be here. I could have, probably had a good reason for canceling. And we just look forward to being here. I love your pastor. I love you guys. I do count you guys all as friends. Could I borrow some money? Anyway, and it is just good to be here. In Matthew chapter 5, I'm going to tell you something that you never thought you needed. Of course, that's what most of us preachers do. I'm going to tell you tonight, talk to you tonight, about how to be angry. You say, oh, I can do that naturally. Yeah, I know. But it's kind of like eating. Do you ever watch some people eat? It will make you not want to eat ever again. In fact, it'll make you want to get rid of what you just ate. And people are going to eat, but don't you think it's nice if we teach them? I remember John one time, he was sitting in his high chair. And he took his finger, we had fried potatoes, and he took his finger and he kept jamming it in the potatoes. And Kathy had said, I think he was about 17. And Kathy said, quit playing. I said, babe, I don't think he's playing. I said, I think he's trying to figure out how to use a fork. He sees us with a fork, and we gave him a fork, and he went like this, and he got it. He hasn't stopped since. Okay, then he found I could hold a fork in both hands. But what I'm saying is there's things you're going to do, so why not get some rules on it? Why not get some stuff? And you're going to be angry, are you not? You know you are. You know, we are, I am not against anger. You know, our country is now run by overbearing women and effeminate men, all right? Now, lady, don't come up after church and get on me about what I said, because I'll know. Send your husband. I'll still know. Okay? but you know, you get this thing about, well, nobody should be angry. If look, do this. And if you have a pulse, I'm going to prophesy. At some point in your life, you're going to get angry. It is going to happen, is it not? But do you understand there are people in jail tonight for the rest of their lives because they got angry one time and they really lost it? And so you are going to be angry, and so we're going to look at that tonight. And I'll just give you some pointers. We're not going to practice or anything like that, but we're going to look at it. Look at Matthew chapter chapter 5. Here is the Lord talking. He says this, "But I say unto you that whosoever is angry," there it is, "with his brother without a cause." Now, did you just notice that the Lord didn't say, if you're angry, you're wrong? See, because he's not effeminate. He said, if you're angry without a cause. And we'll look at that later, but it says, "But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment." Let's bow our heads. Let's talk to the Lord. Father, it is good to be saved. Lord, now I will say this, Father. I think most of us here, we watched 8 years of a really, really vicious presidency that hates you, hates Christianity, hates this country, and the new president has been refreshing. But aside from that, God, our hope is not in him or any politics or Democrat or Republican. And Lord, sometimes we pick up a paper and we see that our country has made another bad decision. And when we do that, God, sometimes it's easy to forget that it is just good to be saved. And Lord, I'm just glad to be saved. Help us always to remember that it is good to be saved. Bless these folks, God. These people came here for only two reasons. They want something from you, and they want something from your book. And if they don't get it tonight, it will be my fault. I do not want to do these people wrong. God, I do not want to be the barrier between you and them. I don't want to be the reason they did not hear from you. So that means that they need you to get Sam Gipp out of their way and out of your way. And that is my prayer tonight. Get Gipp out of their way, out of your way. Please, Father, set the speaker aside and speak to the hearts of each individual here. God, you have designs on the lives that are represented. I pray, God, that your plan wins. Everyone will be better for it. So I pray, God, your people will be edified, that they being edified would leave here and live to your glory. In Jesus Christ's name I pray, amen. I want to read that portion again because there's a sidebar here that's really not my message, but you need to see it. Verse 22 says this, "But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother," now do you see the clause, "without a cause"? If you take those three words out, you change the definition of that verse, do you not? You say, who would do that? Every modern translation out there. The modern translations take out "without a cause." So now you have the Lord Jesus Christ saying, "But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother shall be in danger of the judgment." That sounds pretty bad, doesn't it? Like you have really done something wrong, have you not? Let me show you how bad it is. Go to Mark chapter 3. Mark chapter 3, and let me show you who is in danger of the judgment. It's talking about the Lord here, and it says this in verse 5. "And when he had looked round about on them with anger." Jesus Christ got angry, did he not? If you take "without a cause," Jesus Christ is in danger of the judgment. But continue to read and look how it's qualified. "And we looked round about them with anger, being grieved for the hardness of their hearts." You know what that "being grieved for the hardness of their hearts" is? That was his cause. That was his cause. And so he had a cause. New translations make Jesus Christ, God in the flesh, in danger of judgment because they change his very words. But that's what I want to get across to you. The first thing, as far as how to be angry, have a cause. Really, have a cause. Now a lot of causes are personal. You know what the unpardonable sin is? To disagree with me. No, I don't mean to disagree with Sam Gipp. No, I don't believe that. But all Christians believe that. All Christians believe that if you disagree with me, I have the right. You know, that's like unpardonable sin unto death. I can kill you for that. Guys, I hate to tell you this, but you are not the end-all, do-all of Christianity. And if somebody disagrees with you, listen carefully. They may be right. You may be wrong. Come on, pal. Your wife's been telling you that for years. Isn't that true? But sometimes, guys, when we disagree, have you ever disagreed with somebody and then found out that they were right and you were wrong? Okay. Aren't you glad? Think about this. You're going to laugh when I say it. Aren't you glad back when you argued and you knew you were right and they were wrong, you didn't pick up and hit them with a chair? Or shoot them? Guys, do you know what we do in the name of right? We do some most ungodly, wicked, vicious, satanic things because we're right. Isn't that true? You know this Antifa crowd that's trying to set the whole nation on fire? Ask them why they're doing it. They're not going to say, because we're rebellious, because we're communists, because we hate everybody. You know what they're going to say? We are right and have the right to do this. Isn't that true? So guys, don't worry about being right. You're always going to be right. Did you ever hear anybody say, well, I think I'm wrong here, but I'm going to argue this point anyway. So I hate to tell you this, but somebody disagreeing with you, that is not necessarily a good reason to get angry. I like guys, you have code words. I actually don't. Playing some kind of a sporting event, and a guy goes off like fireworks. And then they go, well, you know, I'm just competitive. I go, yes, very competitive. I said, that's Greek for poor sport. Brother, I've seen things go on softball courts, softball fields, in church softball games where two brethren never spoke to each other again because they blew up over something that happened at second base. And brother, if that's where you are, never play again. Really. Somebody disagreeing with you, you be careful of that. Now, sometimes people do you wrong, and it will make you angry. Somebody will cheat you. Somebody will lie about you, and it will make you angry. And I'll talk to you about how to deal with that anger, and I'm not going to tell you don't be angry. There's going to be times when you are. But somebody just disagreeing with you, hey, sometimes people don't like you. I know that's hard to believe. That is just hard to believe. I got to tell you what happened one time. You know, there's actually people that don't like me. It shocks me to this day. But now be honest. Haven't you ever been sitting in a room and a stranger walked in the room? And you just went, I don't like them. Did you ever do that? I'm not going to jump on you for that. The only thing you're guilty of is being human. Now, don't pull your gun out and shoot them. Well, I just didn't like them. But I got to tell you what happened. 20 some years ago, I was flying into Chattanooga to do the John Ankerberg TV debate on different versions, and Ken Barker, head of the NIV, was going to be there. Art Farst, head of the New King James, guy named Don Wilkins, was going to be there from the New American Standard. Dan Wallace was there, taught textual criticism at Dallas Theological, and James White, alias Snow White, from Arizona, the guy that hates the thought that God has a perfect Bible, he was going to be there. So I'm flying on this plane, and Kathy was with me. I'm on the aisle. And about four rows ahead of me and on the other side of the aisle, did you ever see somebody you could just tell they have a mad love affair with themselves? I mean, this guy was just beaming to know that he was there in his own presence. And he is talking across the aisle. So you could see this guy, like if this guy would have had a gun, we'd have had a federal crime, okay? And he's just talking to this guy like, you are so lucky to sit across the aisle from me. And I'm watching this go on, and I think you should be thankful for all things, and I was very thankful. I said, God, thank you that that guy's not sitting there, because we would have a federal crime, okay? Because I would jump across that aisle. I just couldn't take that. And so we're halfway there. We're halfway to Chattanooga, and this guy in love with himself all of a sudden turns around, looks me right in the eye, and goes, hello, Dr. Gipp. It was James White. I was thrilled. I said, oh, yes. I said, I didn't even like him before I knew who he was. My prejudice is anointed of the Holy Spirit. But guys, look, somebody's not going to like you. That is not a good reason for you to be angry. All right? Sometimes there is a cause. I will tell you one time. Let me ask you a question. Did you ever watch a sparrow chase a crow? You know what that's like? That is like a midget chasing a UFC heavyweight champ. Why? Why? That crow could just turn around and slap that sparrow down. Why is he doing it? Because that crow was raiding that sparrow's nest, and that crow knew what he was doing was wrong, and that's why he's under conviction. I'm telling you, that's the truth. And there are going to be times when you're going to get angry, and it is good. I knew our son Nathan, when he was down in Pensacola, and he was seeing his he was seeing Rose, he went by the apartment where she was staying to pick her up, and she was a little bit afraid about going out. And he said, "Why?" And he said, "There were six guys. He saw these six guys in the parking lot on the way in." And she said, "Well, they said something to me the other day." And Nathan turned around and walked down there and got in the face of six guys. You say that's crazy, but he backed them all down because there was a cause. Now look, if he just walked up to those, if when he was coming in, if he did just try to pick a fight with six guys, he'd have got what he wanted. Isn't that true? I knew of a young man. There were three drug dealers in his parking lot of the apartment where he was living, and he went out there. And this kid, he's like this big around. In fact, this outweighs him. And he went and got in the face of these three drug dealers. Says, "You're not doing this in my parking lot. I live here. You're not doing it. You're not selling this stuff in my parking lot." You know what they did? They got in their car and changed location. You know why? Because there was a cause. And sometimes, guys, there is a cause. Is it North Carolina or South Carolina, the Gamecocks? I don't know. It's a college team. It's one. It's North or South. I never know who it is. And I'm telling you guys, I control my temper very well, but sometimes I unload it. And I spend a lot of times in airports, and I am walking down the airport concourse, and a guy is coming to me, and he's from one of those, whichever it is, North or South, and he's on his way to a football game, and his t-shirt says, "You can't lick our..." I stopped him. I said, "You should be ashamed of wearing that shirt in public." And he had that cute smile. You know, just think about it. I said, "You are not talking about a college team." And I said, "I hope your college team loses every time." I said, "You ought to be ashamed. You got people reading that as you walk down this airport corridor. You ought to be ashamed of yourself being out in public." You say, "Why?" "Because I was angry with a cause." You know, sometimes the cause is a righteous cause, is it not? I had this happen. I'm in a burger place. And a kid's got this shirt on, and it says Led Zeppelin live and uncensored. It was the foulest word he could think of. Now I know what I'm like, and I know what I was like before I got saved. So here's what I did. I went and talked to God, because he's my owner. And I said this. I said, "God, you own the entire planet except one square foot in front of me." And I said, "That one square foot in front of me belongs to me." And I said, "I will not say one word to him unless he steps in my square foot." Now, is that not being reasonable? I mean, I didn't say 10 feet. I didn't say the whole restaurant. And so I got my burger, and I stood there for a while to make sure, you know, I had to make sure there's no chairs in front of me or anything. And I see this guy get his burger, and he walks clear over the other side of the restaurant and sits down. And I said, "Okay, that's good enough." Well, it had one of those condiment bars, you know, where you went up and got your lettuce and tomatoes and blah, blah, blah. So I went up there, and there's this big guy standing in front of me, and he moves out of the way, and another guy stepped right here, and I am reading right here, Led Zeppelin, live and uncensored. I'll check. He's on my property. He is mine. And I leaned over, and I said, "You know, buddy, that is a pretty sorry shirt, and you've got to be a pretty sorry individual to wear that in public." Now, you understand that all Americans have a minor in free speech law. You speech, I have the right. I said, "Hey, stupid, I didn't say you didn't have a right to wear it. I said it's a sorry shirt, and only a sorry person would wear it in public." And he's still, right. And he walked over and talked about his law degree. But, hey, guys, look, I'm telling you, sometimes you're going to see something that's going to get you angry. And if you have a cause, go for it. I'm not telling you to get in a fight. I'm at the point now where I couldn't whip a 14-year-old girl. You know, I am 67 years old, but my mouth is still 20. And sometimes I say, shut up, you're going to get us both killed. But I'm telling you guys, if you're going to be angry, you'd better have a cause. I have stopped people for taking Jesus Christ's name in vain in public. You'll know how long ago this was. I was in a barber shop. You know, where if you have hair, they cut it. And I'm in this barber shop, and I'm on the staff of a church, okay? And there's two guys sitting here, and then this big guy, he had to be Paul Bunyan. He comes in there, you know, he's got this big black and red flannel shirt. Surely there was a blue ox parked outside. And he's sitting there, you know, and he had one of those voices like, I want to get when I grow up. I mean, if this guy said hello, if he said, I hate you, he'd go, yeah, that's okay, I hate me too. That's just how he was. And he starts, and when he talked, people in the houses, five houses away, could hear him. And he starts talking, you know, and these two guys are listening because he just looks like he's going to crush them if they don't listen. And so he's talking, and he goes, and Jesus Christ Almighty. Now, let me say something about that. That statement right there, I agree 100% with that statement, don't you? But he was not making a doctrinal statement. And so when he did that, when he said that, I did what any good Christian would do. I went to prayer. and I prayed. I prayed this prayer. I said, Lord, please have him not say that again because it bothers me. You know what's wrong with God? He doesn't do voicemail. And he picked up. And here's what he said. As I sat in that chair, he said, hey, stupid. It is my name he's taken in vain, and it's me he upsets. And he said, I have you down there to stop him from upsetting me. I'm not up here to stop him from upsetting you. It's a novel way to look at it. Well, while we're having that discussion, this guy goes off a second time. And Jesus Christ Almighty. Now, I know myself, and I know I'm one of those third time the charm guy. And I know that if he says a third time, I am going to jump. I mean, guys, I had a strategy. I'm going to hit him in the fist with my face. Strategically biting his knuckles. And then when he gets weak from a loss of blood, I'm going to spring. I've tried this several times, and just before I spring, I wake up somewhere else. But so then I went, I changed my prayer. You know what I said? Rapture, mild coronary, get me out of here because I'm reading tomorrow's headlines, preacher killed in barbershop. And I can't even prove this. It will not surprise me at all when I get to heaven to find out that the Lord prodded him because about that time he went, Jesus Christ Almighty. And I did not have a plan. But when he said that, I said, Bud, do you know Jesus Christ? And when I said that, this guy... He didn't have hands, he had hams. And these things go into a fist. And the red of his shirt went up into his face, and these veins stuck out. And when I said that, you know, he looks up at me, and the barber, you know, the two guys with him, they kind of looked over at me because they want to be able to identify the body. And the barber is like, I'm half, oh, you're done, you're going to leave, go. Because he's thinking about the damage. I look like somebody from Dick Tracy. This half cut, this half not. Go, half, free. And this guy looks at me and he goes, what did you say? I said, do you know Jesus Christ? I can't say that I do. I said, well, I do. I said, he's the Son of God. I said, he's my Savior. And I said, I don't appreciate using a name like that. I said, I don't want you to. He said, well, I guess I don't have to. I said, I know you don't. Say, what was that? That was a sparrow and a crow. You think if I walked down the street and slapped back upside the head, he'd back down? But he knew what he was doing was wrong, didn't he? You know what's wrong with some of you? You won't get angry for God. You say, what if you get punched? Well, don't tell me. Anyway, the guys, you need to have a cause. Who do you get angry with? Well, in general, people. Now, there's two kinds of relationships you have with people. There are what I call necessary relationships. You say, what's that? Okay, try this one. Marriage? Would you call that a necessary relationship? Guys, I don't care who you have to see, don't have to see. You have to see your wife. You ladies, you have to see your husband. You know what my advice is? Make that a good relationship. I do not understand people that you ever hear anybody say this? A guy will work for a company and they shortchange him and overwork him and underpay him, but he won't say anything bad about it. And you ever hear anybody say, man, he married that job. He married that company. They mistreat him and he won't. Hey, I don't know about your job, but you better remember this about the person that's got your name. You married them. And there is no relationship on this earth, I'm talking about human relationship, that is more important than your marriage relationship. And so you'd better watch yourself. Let me give you some advice. I told you, Kath and I have been married for 45 years. We established this. I said 45 years ago, we will never, I don't care if we ever get angry with each other, we will never call each other names. Now, let me tell you, 45 years ago, I just thought it was a good idea. 45 years later, I realized it was a stroke of genius. Look at her. She's like 100. But she's pretty, she's beautiful. I mean, if we get into a name-calling contest, it'd be like getting into a rock fight and she gets all the rocks. Look at this. Can't you think of things to call this face? I had some guy, he was trying to get me mad. He says something about me having jowls. I don't even know what they are. But, okay, I keep pork chops in there. But look at my wife. She's still beautiful. In fact, I tell you, I do call her names. I do. I call her names. I'll say, I call her beautiful. I call her the MW3. That's the most wonderful woman in the world. So that's what I call her, okay? But guys, you better beware of what you say to your wife. Lady, you better beware of what you say. Now here's the thing. Oh, but he said I was sorry. Yeah, that's right. He called you some horrible thing, and then he said he was sorry. Then he went out the door. And the devil steps in the kitchen and said, he called you that. Well, yeah, but he said he was sorry. But if he didn't believe it, he wouldn't have said it. You better be careful. You young married couples, don't call each other names. Look what it says in Ephesians chapter 4. We've all heard the standard, and I think correct, teaching, you know, evening in the morning or the first day, evening in the morning or the second day, evening in the morning or the third day. Well, look what it says in verse 26, chapter 4. Be ye angry. There it is. Doesn't say don't not to be angry. Be angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath. You know what I tell people? You better get this thing settled before the sun goes down. Don't go to bed angry. I don't know what you've got to do, but you better get this thing settled. You say why? Because that book told you to, in the very verse where it told you to be angry, it told you get it all settled by sundown. And you had better do that. Because if you don't do it, you will go days, weeks. You will hurt yourself. You will hurt your relationship. This book, this is not my philosophy on marriage. This is not psychology. This is not, I've studied the human psyche. No. Because when you're hot, you don't want to get it taken care of by sundown. But your book, written by a God that you think is infinite because he is, that is a God who is never wrong. Is that not true? Then he told you, get this squared away before sundown. And you will be better for it. So, you know, you're going to have a marriage problem, then get it taken care of by sundown. Outside of the marriage, I talk about husband and wife, family. Now, I say this, family is good to love from a distance. But you know, again, you know, I know some brothers, they will fight and fight and fight, but boy, you touch one of them, and the other guy, the brothers all pile on you, and that's good. But your family, you need to take care of those anger problems. You really do. Whether it's, come on, be honest, it's jealousy or it's pride or it's whatever, greed, I don't know. But the fact is, guys, that you have a necessary relationship. To understand that you go into a restaurant, you may never see the waiter or waitress again in your life, right? Can you say that about your brother? I'm talking about your physical brother. Oh, I know there's a chance. He lives 10 states away, and your paths are not going to cross until just before you die. But the fact is that there, even 10 states away, there's a better chance of you seeing your brother than there is running into a waitress or a waiter or somebody else. Isn't that true? Guys, you better take care of your relationships, necessary relationships. You know what I tell people to do with family? Just forgive them. Now, here's when I say forgive them. I like Christians because they're all very godly, Christ-like, and they want to forgive. And they kind of say it this way. Yes, I'm going to forgive them. I'm going to forgive them just as soon as they crawl over here on their knees on broken glass and beg me to forgive them. I'm going to show them how godly I am, and I'm going to have them kiss my ring, and then I'll forgive them. You know, you may as well just forgive them. You say, without them asking? You know why they're not going to ask you to forgive them? Because right now they're sitting at home waiting for you to crawl on broken glass, on your knees, kiss the ring, and say, I am sorry. Well, I'm not going to, because they were wrong. Well, of course they were wrong, because they argued with you. You know, I tell people and families, just forgive them. Now, if you do that, let me give you a little heads up on this. Forgive them, but don't tell them. I was preaching in Norfolk, Virginia one time, and there was a sailor in there. I don't know what your family relationship was like, you know. If you had a dad that loved you and a mom that loved you or that liked you or whatever the case may be, that's good. Not everybody had that. And I said, if your dad didn't treat you right, you ought to forgive him. And so the next day, the next night service, this sailor comes in. He was, that was my dad, you know, my dad. And his dad was the wrong. His dad was in the wrong, and this kid was in the right. And he goes, and he said, I took your advice last night, and I forgave my dad. I said, well, good. He said, and then I went home, and I called him to let him know. Oh, that is not the thing to do. I knew where that went, because he said, I called my dad, say, Dad.
Yeah?
I'm just calling to let you know I forgave you.
For what, you idiot?
and it went off from there. Look, just forgive them. You know why? You say, well, it won't help the relationship. No, but it'll help your stomach acid. And stomach acid levels get real important in life. Far more important than you think, okay? And so with those people, you just ought to forgive them. In church, this is a necessary relationship. Now, look, this is just a fact. Please don't. Just don't go over to somebody tonight and say this. But you can't have even a group this big and like everybody in your church. And when you don't like somebody, here's what I tell it. The equivalent of not liking them is, that means you don't say after church, let's go out for burgers. Why would you want to sit across the table and eat burgers with somebody you don't like? Correct? Now, but you love them. You say, well, wait a minute, how would I love them and not like them? It's real easy. If you don't like them, stay away from them. You'll both be happier. But if tonight their house burns down, you throw about $500 in the offering to help them build a new house. Yeah. Say, but I don't like them. You don't have to like them. You don't have to ever see the new house. Yeah. But don't you love them? So guys, there are people you don't like. But let me help you this. Again, to this day, I still remember one time when this guy was preaching some meeting when I was down in Pensacola. And he called it an alabaster service, where Mary took the alabaster box, it was so precious, and she broke it. And this guy was talking, he got into this asking people to forgive you, or forgiving people something. And then he gave the invitation, and the invitation was, don't come forward, go to somebody and forgive them. Well, now, I didn't have to go any place because there was nobody I was upset with, and I never forgive anyway. And I can still remember this day, this girl comes over and she just says, I just want to let you know that I forgave you tonight. And then walked away. To this day, I have no idea what that was about. I don't know. I don't know if I ever spoke to her. I might have shaken her hand when they had this handshaking in the church, you know. I have no idea to this day what her stinking problem was. But here's your problem, guys. You know what your problem is? You don't understand what a precious relationship is. Your family, your husband, your wife, your children, your parents. You know what's wrong with you parents? Or some of you kids? Here's what it is. Your parents. You remember that guy on the United flight? They drug him down the aisle. I saw some guy on the internet said, oh, I wouldn't have had a problem with that. I was raised in a Baptist church. I got drugged down the aisle every Sunday. But you know what some of you young people are thinking? One of these days I'm going to turn 18, I'm going to go out those doors, I'm not coming back, I'm going to leave my parents behind, I'm going to leave church behind, and they'll never see me again. Can I say something to the young people? Please remember this. Don't burn any bridges leaving home that you might have to cross 10, 15 years later coming back home. Oh, no, because when I walk out, I'm never coming up back. You don't know that. I knew of a young girl, and her mother was abusive. I'm talking about in discipline. Beat her with the buckle end of the belt. Her mother hated her and was horrible. When that girl turned 18, she left home. And she lived in the Midwest, brother. She went west until she hit the Pacific Ocean and lived in California. She stopped in California because there's no place for us to go. And she said, I'm never coming home. And she met this young guy, and he was interested in her, and she was interested in him. And he asked her, hey, come on, lady, isn't that something when this guy loves you so much and you love him and he asks you to marry him? But you don't call your dad and mom and say, come? And she didn't. And they didn't come. They didn't even know she got married. Hey, mom, wouldn't you like to be there when your daughter has her first child? No, they weren't there for the first one, second one, or third one. No, she'd left. And then she wasn't there, the family wasn't there when the marriage broke up. But 23 years later, she got on a plane and flew back to the Midwest and was reunited with her family. Young people, you say, I'm going to get out of here, and I don't have to worry about this relationship because I know I'm so right that if I damage it, it doesn't matter. Look, don't destroy it. Don't burn down bridges that you may have to cross. I don't ever plan on crossing them. Hey, nobody ever plans on crossing that bridge back. But a lot of people came back across that bridge. Don't burn the bridge. So what you guys need to do when you get angry is you need to say, this is a necessary relationship. This is my family. No matter how mad I am, I need to maintain this relationship. This is my church. I need to maintain this relationship. Do you understand? Now, there are what I call unnecessary relationships. You say, who's that? That's the waiter or the waitress. That's the guy that sold you the used car, and it was a lemon. There are unnecessary relationships. There are individuals, there are businesses that you just don't have to deal with. Isn't that true? But be careful of what you say, because we do have a testimony. Isn't that true? And so you have unnecessary relationships. And look, if you got bad service, or if somebody lied to you or cheated you and you got angry, just be careful. Be careful of what you say. I'm going to tell you somebody you're going to get mad at. If you haven't been mad yet in this case, you have not been saved more than about 2 weeks. You ever been mad at God? I always say it this way. Have you ever gone behind the barn and looked up toward heaven? You said something to God, and you know what you're thankful for? You're thankful that he doesn't throw the lightning bolts as soon as you say it. You know what the Bible says about God? He is slow to anger. If God were not slow to anger, this room would be empty. And there would be a bunch of barns with smoldering craters out behind him, where as soon as you got lippy with him one time. Now, here's the good side of getting angry with God. You always know when you're angry with him, he's right, you're wrong. Right? Believe me, that gives me peace. Did you ever get angry with somebody because you were right and then found out that they were right and you were wrong? Well, you don't ever have to worry about that. If you are angry with God, I don't care if you disagree with God. He is always right. You are always wrong. Let me give you a prayer. I'm going to give you a prayer. I've used this many times, probably use it again. I've said this to God. I highly disagree with what's going on in my life right now. There's nothing wrong with that prayer. If you finish it with this, but you're right and I'm wrong. That's all you got to finish it with. Look, you're not going to agree with this infinite God. You don't agree with what God has done in other people's lives, let alone your own. Isn't that true? And so there's going to be times when your jaws are going to get tight. You're going to double up your fists and you're going to say something like, you call yourself a God of love and you do this? So I'd never do that. Really? You won't do that after you bury a child? You won't do that if you go home and find out that your whole house burnt down and you could have stayed home tonight and it wouldn't have happened? I'm telling you, God is going to do some things in your life. He's done them in mine. He's probably going to do more. He's going to do something in your life and you are going to be upset with him and you're going to be angry with him. And you know what you need to do? You need to say, hey, I've said it this way. These are the exact words I have prayed through gritted teeth.
I highly disagree with what's going on in my life right now, but don't worry, I know who the idiot is in this picture.
You say you did, those are the exact words. Because I know anytime I disagree with God, I'm the idiot. I disagree with you, I might be wrong, and you might be wrong. But every time I disagree with God, I know he's right. See, but I still got angry. Then as soon as you get this thing cooled down, guys, remember, I don't care what you say, remember he is right and you're wrong. Get back behind the barn as quick as you can and say, thanks for not nailing me when you could have. Thanks 3 days ago when I said that to you. You could have dropped the lightning bolt and leave me a smoldering hole in the ground. And because of your mercy and your grace, you did not do that. Because you would be right in anything you do to me. Isn't that true? So guys, you're going to get angry with people. Now, let me tell you how to be angry. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 14. First Corinthians chapter 14 and look at verse 20. Brethren, be not children in understanding. Howbeit in malice be ye children, but in understanding be men. You know, sometimes children just don't understand things. I was telling somebody the other day, I remember this so well. You know, my wife, because the last 32 years we've been on the road, I say we homeschooled, we actually trailer schooled, and she would be doing like high school classes with John and lower elementary school classes with Luke, because she had the gamut of the boys. I remember Luke just couldn't get math. I mean, he just, you know, he is looking at math and it just doesn't make any sense. You say, why? Because he's stupid? No, he's a kid. Today, you know what he does? He will see his mother and they will discuss algebra equations. I hate him. Because as he's discussing them, he'll talk to her looking at me. And so, because he knows I have no idea what he's saying. I think he's cussing me in math. But you say, well, wait a second. That's the same person across years. There's things kids don't understand. Isn't that true? John with math. I remember John. He didn't want to take math. He said, Mom, I'm never going to need this. John owns a construction company, and he does all of his own bidding, and he's always using math. So there's a thing where kids don't understand. But look what it says. It says, Brethren, be not children in understanding. Guys, you got to grow up in understanding, be men. Howbeit in malice be ye children. Now, do you know why God tells you to be children in malice? Because do you know how a child is in malice? I don't like him. I don't like him. I'm never going to play with him again. I'm never going to talk to him. Right? And what are they doing tomorrow? They're playing. Oh, that we would all be children. Because we adults, you know, somebody says, well, you're acting like children. Some of you ought to. I knew a guy that this guy went to a very tough field, a very, very difficult foreign field, got a church eked out of this culture. His church was so big that if you were in the back row, you were in the second row. There were two rows. That's it. And he finally gets something going, and they get their building, and a guy got mad at him and left the church and took four other families. So five families left the church. And you know why the guy left? Because one Sunday morning, that missionary didn't shake his hand on the way out the door. That's foolish. That's stupid. That really is. You say that's childish. Unfortunately, it's not. A child would have gotten mad and been back for Sunday night service. So you know what you do? You get mad like a child, but kids, they don't stay mad. You know what you do? Hey, can I give you some help? Never keep portfolios. So what are you saying? When somebody does you wrong, don't have this little thing in your memory. And I remember, come on, have you ever, and just like the time in 1987 when you got the last piece of chicken. Right?
Kids don't do that. Adults do that. Guys, in malice be children. Get mad and let it go. But we never let it go. It gets so bad, we come down the aisle of the grocery store and we say, oh, they're coming down the same aisle. And so you end up in the liquor aisle. Some of you belong there anyway. So let your anger be temporary. Let me say this. Remember, above all things, do no damage. Do no damage. Isn't the devil called the destroyer? Why would you want to do what the devil can do? I might have told you this back. I was not even saved, and I learned a great spiritual lesson. It was like around 1968, 69. And at that time, who was Antifa today was called hippies then, and they were trying to set fire to the whole country. And I'm watching the news, and I'm, like I said, 18, 19, these hippies burnt this Bank of America building down in California. They burned a bunch of them down. And this guy from the TV news program interviewed this hippie that burned a building. Now, guys, can I explain something? When you set fire to a building and get interviewed instead of arrested, the country's already made the wrong turn. And they said, why are you burning these buildings down? And he said, because we're going to build a new country, but we got to burn the old one down first. And I learned a spiritual lesson. Any hippie can burn a building. Could I ask anybody ever see a building that a hippie built? I have never seen a building that a hippie built, and if I did, I wouldn't go inside. Right? Let me ask, is this not true? Couldn't you get a six-year-old to come in this building with a pack of matches, and by this time tomorrow, it'll be a smoldering concrete foundation? Can that six-year-old build it? Come on, Kenny. No. Then don't destroy, because anybody can destroy, and the devil is a destroyer. And guys, you're going to think I'm apostate when I say this, but when two preacher friends of mine are mad at each other, I don't care who's right. Oh, certainly you care who's right. No, I don't. Well, don't you want to get your scripture and choose? No, I don't care who's right. You know what I care about? Who's going to do right? You know, I could be the assistant pastor in his church, and your pastor and I disagree. Obviously, he's wrong, because I'm always right. So now I'm right. And now because I'm right, I have the right to do anything. So I come to him one day and say, just to let you know, Pastor, I'm leaving the church. God's called me to start a church across the street. Because there's no Bible-believing work in this area. Now, here's the thing. Where we disagree, I might be right. But what I'm doing is wrong. And then I start calling people in the church and going, well, you know I love the pastor, but I'm a little bit, there are just some things I don't want to say. And then the more people that go across the street to my church, I go, see how God's judging him? That ain't God, guys. Anybody can destroy. Don't do damage. I am telling you, there are people, I told you there are people in prison tonight. Did you hear this? I lost my temper. Why would you brag about that? Is this not true, guys? Is temper not the strength of the steel? Guy takes a sword, he makes it out of steel, and it's like hot butter. But he heats it up and tempers it. And he puts it in oil and he tempers that steel. And temper is the strength of the steel, correct? I had this truck one time. And it had an aftermarket dipstick for the oil. And the aftermarket dipstick was made out of pasta. You ever see a dipstick? It's tempered steel. You can take this thing and you can bend it until both ends touch. And when you let go, it goes, right? And I'm sure when this guy, I don't know how he lost the dipstick, and he got an aftermarket dipstick. And I'm sure when he took it out of the thing that you could take it and go like this and bring. But it had been in there too long. And now, and in this particular truck, the only reason it had an engine was to break the fall of the oil to the driveway. It would have saved me time to just go out in the driveway and pour a quart on the driveway. But this way it went around the engine and then hit the driveway. So I was checking the oil a lot. And I would pull the dipstick out, and I put a couple quarts in, and a couple more, and a couple more. And then I put the dipstick in, and I'd push it, and it'd go, and it'd be like this. It'd be like an inverted U.
I could have tied it in a knot. So I straighten it out, and I put it in, and now it is like a U. Straighten it out, and I put it in, talking to the guy that made it. You know how I put it back in the engine? I literally had to, beat it in like a half an inch at a time. It was like pushing a noodle. Now, wait a second. It had been tempered. Now it was worthless. You know why? It lost its temper. How did it do that? It got too hot too often. Why would men boast about losing their temper? Why would you boast about losing your strength? I had a guy in my church. I love him. I love him this day. Guy was, he was bench pressing 450 pounds. And this guy had a temper. I mean, if you walked in church and said, hey, it's good to see you. And he'd go, oh, it's not, you usually don't like to see me, but today it's good to see me, huh? And you'd think he's joking. And it's, you remember, it's like touching the tar baby. You can't, ooh, ooh. So you don't like to see me. Is that what you're saying? And so then you go, oh, I got to get my hand away. And I mean, it's like you're about to have a fight. And all you did is walk in and say, glad to see you. I remember one time he came in my office and this guy is screaming. He picks up a chair to hit me with. And I thought, what's wrong with this picture? You bench 450. Give me the chair. What are you? You don't need a chair. Come over here and crush my head. Give me, I need the chair, the whip, the gun, okay? But you know what's wrong? Go off like a rocket. I had a guy in my church one time. I mean, he just got mad, man. He just called me everything he could. One Sunday night, and I came into church Wednesday, and he sees me. He didn't apologize. He goes, oh, he said it like this. Sorry about the other night, preacher, but, you know, that's just me. I said, well, that's okay. I say every now and then I get drunk, but I said, that's just me. Why do we excuse that? Why would you be proud of how much damage you did? Why would you be proud of how the rant that you went on and how many holes you punched in drywall? That's a real smart one. Hey, guys, do no damage. You know why? Because if you don't do damage, you don't have to fix it. You don't have to stand in the courtroom saying, I lost my temper and shot him. And I am so sorry. But they're still dead and you're still going to prison. So, whatever you do, do no damage. Now, let me tell you how to leave a church. I'm going to tell you how to leave a church. Never leave angry. Never. You leave a church angry, you know what you're going to find out? 6 months later, you know what you're going to find out? You can't stay mad. Nobody can stay mad. If you get mad at your pastor and you think you got a good reason for walking out, when you're angry, hey, when people are angry, killing someone seems justified. Isn't that true? So you walk out angry, and then 6 months from now, you aren't angry anymore. And somebody says, so why'd you leave that church? And you think about why you left, and you think, oh, that is such a childish reason. I am such an idiot. Well, you're not going to tell them that. So you're going to go, well, brother, you know, I don't want to say exactly what, but there are some things that if you knew the whole story, you'd never set foot inside that church. You leave a church angry, you know what happens? 6 months later, you got to lie. You got to make something up. You got to fabricate a reason why you left. You got to make a new doctrine out of the doctrine of not shaking my hand when I left church. Isn't that true? Well, you know, there's some doctrinal problems. I love Brother Stevens. I want you to know that. But he's just got some problems. I wouldn't say anything. No, you just go ahead and go there. Just hope you're not there the day God judges the whole place. Don't leave a church angry. Because you'll find out you cannot stay angry. Then you'll say something that justifies your stupid act. Don't do it. Say, am I allowed to get angry? Bible said, be angry and sin not. Bible said, be angry with a cause, right? Yes, you're going to get angry. Don't make it an art form, guys. Don't make it, you know, you don't have to practice. I don't understand people that get angry and throw things and destroy things. It just does not make sense. The best thing you can do when you get angry is be a pressure cooker. Just sit there and boil inside. And go take a nice walk, and don't say anything. Look, me tell you what's happened to this country. 25 years ago, if a Christian made another Christian mad, or if a pastor made a church member mad, or even did them wrong, you know what you did if somebody did you wrong? Another Christian did you wrong? You went and told God, didn't you? Now, by that evening, we've told Facebook. We don't go to God. If he does something that makes me mad, I've got it posted by sundown, and I've given my story, and we've had all kinds of comments on how ungodly he is because I put it on there. And then 6 months from now, I realize I never should have done it. Well, you can't take the knife out at that point, can you? Now, I'm telling you guys, the hardest part is not getting angry. The hardest part is doing no damage. So you better have a cause. If you're going to get angry, have a cause. But that cause does not justify damage. It does not justify death. It does not justify you being an imbecile in public, throwing a tantrum. It does not justify that. So have a cause. Keep in mind the necessary relationships, your marriage relationship, your church relationship, your family relationship. Those are necessary relationships. Don't get so mad that you can say, I haven't talked to my brother in 30 years, bless God, and I hope next time I talk to him, I heard he died. Well, there's something wrong here, buddy. Look, if you can't get along, then don't get along, but you got to get that thing cooled down. You got to get it taken care of. If nothing else, just forgive it. You won't be eating it so much. As far as God, you're going to get mad at God at some point. You are going to get mad at this God because he has got plans for your life that you did not approve of. Isn't that true? Just say this. I disagree. I just disagree. You know what I tell him sometimes? I know you're right, but I still think my way's better. I know you're right, but I don't even know why you're right, because when I look at it my way, I still think my way looks better. But you are right, and I am wrong. Finish it with that. And don't hold your anger. You want to be angry? Be angry like a kid. Two little kids, I hate them. I never talk to them again. And 24 hours later, they're in the sandbox playing Matchbox cars. And do you really believe one of them went, you know, I just came by to tell you I'm sorry about what I said in the sandbox yesterday. I took the red Matchbox car and you wanted it and I used it instead. No. They acted like it never happened and went back to the sandbox. Right? So guys, be a child. That's when you can be childish. So what do you mean? You get mad, let it dissipate. But if you write down a portfolio, you'll read that portfolio every day and you'll go back 30 years. I mean, everybody's, yeah, it's just like the time when you said that back. Yeah, I guess I did. But you know what the problem is? You should have forgiven it. You should have just forgot about it. If nothing else, can't forgive it. You should forget it. And so, don't make a fool of yourself and don't make a corpse of the guy you got mad at. And talk to God. I'd like you to stand with your heads bowed. I heard a guy say this one time, the heads bowed, your eyes closed. A guy said one time, it's not a sin to be wrong, it's a sin to stay wrong. Maybe I'm talking to somebody tonight, you got angry. If you haven't gotten angry about something, you are not alive. But maybe you didn't handle it right. And I'm not going to jump on you for not handling it right, but now you know how. Maybe you do need to go set straight some kind of a relationship with somebody. If it can be done, I'm all for it. But if nothing else, maybe you need to go talk to God and say, God, I am so sorry I was so vindictive. I'm sorry that I tried to damage somebody. I'm sorry that the fact is I hate their guts to this day. You got to get that right. You got to let that thing go. It is not natural to be angry 10 and 15 and 20 years after something happened. It is just not natural. So maybe you need to come down, talk to the Lord, say, Lord, let me get this all squared away. Maybe I'm talking to somebody and you think that going off like 4th of July, every time somebody displeases you, is some kind of a manly thing to do. No, it's a stupid thing to do. Maybe you say, God, I got to get control. I'm going to tell you this, guys. This is not news. That book will help you control that. You read it every... I'm not talking about get a book, chapter, and verse.
I'm talking about read that book and read that book and read that book and read that book and read that book. And over, I'm going to say the word, over years of consistently reading that book, something that used to set you off will happen, and you'll handle it properly. And you'll say, and you don't have a book, chapter, and verse that says, I handle it this way because I read it. But it's because you put so much of that Bible in you, it took care of it. I had a guy smack me in the mouth one time, a preacher, because I believe the King James Bible. Brother, if you just smack me in the mouth when I was lost, you just hit somebody when they smack you in the mouth. It's not even something you think about. You know what I did? Forgave him in 1 second. You say why? 30 pages a day. I realized, I was going home, I was so mad. I was mad. I said, God, I don't feel real good about myself right now. He goes, well, you found out Bible reading's doing something for you. I said, oh, really? Yeah, yeah. You didn't handle it the way Sam Gipp would have handled it. You handled it the way a Christian should have handled it. So read that book and read that book and read that book and read that book and read that book. And that book going in will alter those terrible things about you. So I'm going to have a word of prayer. Then the piano's going to play. Maybe you need to come and just talk to the Lord. Maybe some husbands, wives need to kneel with each other. I'm not saying confess that you're right or you're wrong, but maybe you ought to say this: I'm sorry for what I said, and I don't want to say those things anymore. Father, thank you for your goodness and your grace.